So today's topic is going to be one of those controversial ones. As you're aware, I try to mix classical Islam, tafsir, hadith, with history and with modernity. And I have to give an introduction before I talk about this topic, because what the issue or the scenario is that some of our youngsters came to me. A country, no need to mention the name of the country, has recently instituted a policy of very strict women's code in public, banning women speaking in public, curtailing the education of women, and they are doing this in the name of Islam. And our youngsters, our youth, our sisters especially, they're wondering, what do we do? Should we criticize in public? Should we defend? Is this Islam? What exactly do we do? It's a very awkward scenario. This is in the news for the last week, and especially our muhajjiba sisters, they're put online, they're put on the Inquisition. People ask them, are you supporting of this policy? Or is this something, a part of your Islamic tradition that even the face is covered and you cannot even speak and whatnot? So this is an awkward reality that we have to explain and discuss. Now, the fact of the matter is these are very difficult topics. It's not easy. And when I venture into these complex topics, as usual, I open the door for a whole barrage of criticism. If you are aware, everybody is aware, subhanAllah, I am criticized by every single front for every single thing. Either I'm a fundamentalist fanatic, or I'm a CIA agent, or everything in the middle, or I'm a reformer of Islam, or a RAND scholar, or a sellout, or a jihadist, or whatnot. Everything you can imagine, I have been labeled. And I sometimes wonder, should I just leave talking about these topics and just do some classical, non-controversial stuff? But wallahi, my conscience cannot allow this. Wallahi, I find it, with utmost respect to all the other scholars, is good for them. I am genuinely concerned about the iman of our next generation. And if we do not talk about these difficult, complex topics, if we leave them in the dark, then who else is going to explain? Do you want them to be educated by CNN? Do you want them to get their information from Fox News? So we have to discuss some very difficult topics. And when I discuss, one of the problems is that so many of our insiders, if you like, the religious folks, they want a simplistic black and white answer. They want a yes or no, halal and haram. And when you don't give it to them, and when you try to be nuanced, and if you listen to my talks, you know me, I always try to give context. You know, this is a multifaceted, difficult topic. It's not a simple yes or no. When you try to do this, and therefore the simple-minded, I call them one-dimensional fundamentalists, you don't give them what they want, immediately, oh, this means you're destroying Islam, you're reforming Islam, you're a kafir, you're zindiq, you're dhal. No, a'udhu billah, a'udhu billah, a'udhu billah. We want to defend Islam. But sometimes these are complex issues that are involving multiple arenas. And so there's no easy answer. This is a regime and a group of people. They have a history. They're not coming out of nowhere. And the reality is that you cannot give a simplistic one-syllable answer, yes or no. So what we're going to try to do today is to educate, to begin the conversation. And even if I'm mistaken in some views, the goal is to defend Islam, and the goal is to raise awareness. If you disagree, come to me, let's have a discussion. The goal is to provoke thought. The goal is you do your research. I'm going to be mentioning specific points here. And the way to respond to this is twofold. There is a defensive way. I'm going to go over a few points, defensive, and then there's an offensive way, okay? So bear with me. We're going to go defense mode, two or three points. Then we're going to switch over to offensive mode, two or three points. Then we'll conclude, okay? As for the defensive way, these critics, they come and they say, oh, how come your Islamic religion has all of these codes about morality and whatnot? And the response is they are comparing apples and oranges. Why? Because Islamic law and the Islamic society and the Sharia aims for more than what Western law aims for. Western law is not concerned with private morality. Western law is not interested in akhlaq, in tahdhib, in kamal of the nafs. Western law has had to force itself to withdraw from morality. Western law is up to you what you want to do. Islamic law is not like that. And so you cannot compare liberalism and democracy. You cannot compare secularism with the Sharia. It's apples and oranges, completely different paradigm. And therefore, there's no point in trying to equate, oh, this or that. No, because Islamic law and the Sharia and a Muslim society aims to preach a type of morality to better your soul, to protect akhlaq, to protect, you know, one's iman, one's ruhaniyat. Whereas Western law, Western society has no such intention. And this goes back to their history, in which they were not able to live with religion and the state together. If you know your European history, they could not live under the church. The church became so tyrannical, the church became so backward, that they had to get rid of the church completely in public life. And they said, khalas, we don't want anything to do with the church in public life. They had a very bad experience, call it PTSD with religion. We as Muslims never had that PTSD. Frankly, we look at the past with glorious lens. We have a sense of nostalgia, romantic nostalgia, that in the good old days, we had the pinnacle of technology, the pinnacle of ulama, the pinnacle of science, everything was combined. We never had the types of church inquisitions. Galileo wasn't burnt at our stake, it was burnt at their stake. So Western society had to divorce itself from morality, or else they could not live together. And our Eastern society, we flourished under Islamic law. And it was only under colonization that we had to come under these nation states and strip away from the Sharia and have these difficult contradictions. So fact of the matter is, when a Westerner complains about Islamic law, you have to sit back and educate them. It's apples and oranges. Islamic law has a very different goal than Western law. Also, still in the defensive mode, is that given the reality of the world we live in, question arises that what exactly does Islam say about personal akhlaq and personal morality and personal dress code? And fact of the matter, in an ideal Islamic land, if we lived in a utopia, if everybody, mashallah, was a good Muslim who wanted to abide by the Sharia, there is no question that in an Islamic land, we would want a land in which there's no nudity, there's no fahisha, there's no pornography, there's no drugs, there's no alcohol, there is decency. Now, what level of strictness and what are the penalties? This, even within Islamic law, you have a bit of variation, right? And so some interpretations of Islam say that the face does not have to be covered, it's not obligatory. And some interpretations say that the face should be covered as well. So this is within mainstream Islamic law. And me personally, I even though I don't view the niqab as being obligatory, but still, I respect all opinions that are mainstream. And we have to say that within the mainstream views, there are views that say that the face veil is something that should be protected and covered. With regards to the voice of a woman, factually speaking, the four madhabs as a default say the voice is not an awrah. It's a very, very minority opinion that says a woman's voice should be awrah as well. Generally speaking, the default, and this is the classical Hanafi position as well, some modern Hanafis have a different view, but the classical Hanafi school and the Shafi'is and the Malikis and the Hanbalis, all of the madhahib, the default position, a woman's voice is not an awrah. Nobody has to put any restrictions if she speaks in a dignified manner. And by the way, this is the Quran and Sunnah, because Allah says in the Quran, فَلَا تَخْضَعْنَ بِالْقَوْلِ, that when you speak, do not speak in a flirtatious manner, which means you can speak. Do not speak in a flirtatious manner. And throughout the seerah, I cannot even count how many instances a woman comes and complains or challenges or asks a question, and never once is she told, hey, woman, your voice is awrah. Never once in the entire seerah. And we have, again, the examples are too numerous, and that is the men and women talking to each other in the marketplace, in the masjid, people recognizing, people questioning, the women questioning the Prophet ﷺ, too many examples. So then what is the evidence of those that say woman's voice is awrah? They don't quote Quran and Sunnah as much as they quote a principle, and that principle is shutting the door of temptation. I.e., we don't want to open this door. It's better, you know, to be cautious, right? To be extra overcautious, we should go down this route. So that's what the principle they use. And obviously, this is a Pandora's box, because how cautious do you want to go in this regard? But that is the reality that they use that. And I say, in an ideal world, there should be some, no doubt, soft power, which we want morality, we want covering of the men and women, we want interaction to be in a dignified manner. Now, what level one goes, it depends on which interpretation of Islamic law. That having been said, however, we also have to point out that we are not in an ideal world. And those countries, and I'm trying to be very soft here, there's only two or three countries in the world that have mandated covering the hair. Oh, actually, I think only two now. There's only two or three countries that have mandated covering of their Muslim countries. And what we see, and this is an awkward reality, so please listen to me, because this is where my critics, they kind of love to just put in their two cents here. What we see, those countries that have been overly harsh or overly conservative, there is a backlash. And the reality is that this strictness actually causes many people to leave spirituality and leave loving Allah and His Messenger. And we see in one country that had a very strict law, but recently they shifted it, subhanAllah, from hardcore covering to now nightclubs and dancing overnight. Where did all of that strictness go? It was completely superficial, we can tell like this. Another country has this mandate, and since they have been mandating it, the levels of ridda and leaving Islam has gone from 1% to 30%. Like, there's such an animosity to this rule that it has actually now become something that people, astaghfirullah, hate Islam for. Whereas those countries that haven't mandated it, but have allowed preachers to preach, have softly encouraged it, we have found hijab increasing by tenfold. In the 80s, hardly any Middle Eastern, in my own country, my parents' country as well, it wasn't common amongst the elite. We know this, I know this, you all know this. Now you go there, mashallah, tabarakallah, you see religiosity, prayer, and hijab everywhere. Which one has been more successful? Harsh power or soft power? So I say, and I'm sorry to be blunt here, but especially our young men who are very overzealous, and if they don't get their fatwa immediately, you become the murtad or the zindiq or whatnot. My dear brothers, with utmost love and respect, harshness only works in some situations and scenarios. And the general rule is softness will accomplish more. And this also applies to Islamic laws as well. If society is not ready, and you come and you be ultra strict, you might end up causing more damage and harm. Wallahi, we're on the same wavelength. Don't misquote me. I'm not saying that, you know, Islamic law doesn't mandate modesty. Of course it mandates modesty. But I'm just being factual with you. You're getting angry at me. I'm pushing back at you. The majority of Muslim lands do not mandate this level in public as the law of the land. The majority Muslim lands have allowed the preachers to preach and soft power, and you want them to do that. But you don't put in the government and whip people if they don't, because there's going to be a backlash. So again, this is the tension between ideal and between what? Reality. This is the tension. And when I quote reality, I am not endorsing it. I wish we lived in a utopia. I wish we lived where everybody's iman was, mashallah, 100%. And if their iman is strong, then yes, you can bring a system that is to their level. But when people are not at that level, what did our mother Aisha radiallahu anha say? And this is something we need to think about. We're still on the defensive. We're going to get to offensive now in a bit. Our mother Aisha radiallahu anha said, the first verses of the Quran that Allah revealed, they dealt with heaven and hell, Jannah and Nar, iman and taqwa. And iman then grew in the heart. Once iman became strong, then Allah revealed, don't drink. And Allah revealed, don't gamble. And Allah revealed, don't do zina. Our mother Aisha herself said, if the first commandment that Allah revealed would be don't drink and don't gamble, the Sahaba themselves would have said, we can't do this. And unfortunately, many of our youth, they want to jump to 100 when the people are at level 5. It doesn't work that way. You have to slowly build them up. Now, how do you do it and whatnot will vary from time to place to culture. But I am saying the Sharia asks us that if a policy is going to result in worse backlash, then use your wisdom and go step by step. Gradualism is a part of the Sharia. There's nothing wrong with this. It's not kufr to say this, that listen, the ideal is there. You are way down here. For you to come and start at point 100 when the people are at point number 5 or something, it doesn't work that way. Also, you have to be fair. Islamic law, what has it primarily come to do? Is the veil number 1 on the list? How about prevention of crime? How about safety? How about elimination of poverty? How about justice? Isn't this more important in the Quran than one of these other aspects? So let's begin with the big issues and work our way down. Listen to me carefully. The goal, yes, is the full program, but you don't start from the bottom by ignoring the top, because it's going to result in a backlash. So organically, slowly but surely, this is how it should go. And eventually, when the people are ready, we give them, inshallah ta'ala, a higher level. So this is on the defensive. And for the record, me personally, I do not view women's voice as an awrah. And women's education, I personally, we're going to have a sheikh here who has written 30 volumes about female scholars of Islam. He has a book, Muhaddithat, 30 volumes about the female scholars of Islam. We've always had female scholarship. We've always had Muhaddithat and Muqri'at, and the scholarship has been a part of the tradition. So I personally do not agree with this, but they have their views, and even if we disagree, khair, it is what they have done. Now, this is the defensive. Now, let's go on the offensive against the critics. We need to understand that while it is true that Western lands are largely secular, they don't get involved in private morality, still you cannot have a law that is completely immune to morality. Even the West has morality laws. They must, because by system, by government, you must talk about private issues. Simple example, the West is still discussing issues of abortion, issues of LGBT. They're discussing it because it does affect public and private. And they're having their own agendas about this. They themselves have laws about modesty and nudity. Every single country in the world has certain laws about indecency. Every country. In this country, you have different laws for men and women about what they can and they cannot wear. This is the reality. And person will say, but hold on a sec, the laws of America don't deal with the headscarf. They deal with maybe the upper body or the lower body. And we say, so the point is, the law of the land is getting involved in covering the body. Yes or no? Yes. The law of the land, philosophically speaking, let's not ask the percentage of the body. Is not this government also dictating that a man and a woman cannot walk around publicly without anything on? Yes. There's indecency laws in the federal level, and there's indecency laws at the state level. There's indecency laws. You will go to jail. You will get fined in every Western country, even those, astaghfirullah for saying this, but some countries you're not going to be fined for being absolutely no clothes, but certain acts, conjugal relations, cannot be done in public. Why? Because it's indecent. So every single country has indecency laws. So then the issue then becomes, who gets to decide what is indecent and what isn't? Who gets to decide what percentage of the body should be covered? Our country, this country, America, its indecency laws keep on going down and down and down and down. Every one of us who grew up in the 70s, 80s, 90s, we see how society has changed. What was not allowed on public TV is now mainstream on public TV. What even the cables did not allow, now it is mainstream completely. So when you don't have a system in place, when you don't have a clear-cut methodology, indecency will continue to go down and down and down and down and down. In this country, sorry to be a little bit explicit, a two-piece bathing suit was considered to be indecent and immoral up until the 60s. You would be arrested. In fact, there's a famous picture. It is so halal, I can even show it in the masjid. Nobody would get angry. That's how it is. That a woman is wearing a full bathing suit in this country, 1920. A full bathing suit, but it goes only to her shin, to her beneath the knees. It only goes to here. Full bathing suit. And famous picture, she's being arrested in California Beach. Why? Because her shin is showing. This is 100 years ago. 100 years ago, she's wearing full bathing suit, which we now call a burkini. Burqa, the women's, our sisters wear it, right? She's wearing basically a burkini, right? And she goes to jail in this country. In this country. Why? Because her feet and her upper shin, lower shin, it's not even upper, lower shin is being exposed. So in 100 years, from going to jail because your feet are showing or your lower shin is showing, to now, astaghfirullah, la hawla wa quwwata illa billah, complete almost in the beaches, complete almost nudity. What happens when you don't have a system in place? This is what's going to happen. So every government, every country has decency laws, and you will go to jail for being indecent. If other countries have different laws, we need to push back. Why should American morality and American indecency be the standard of the whole globe? What gives America the right to dictate decency laws? Why can't other cultures have their own decency laws? So we push back at them. Who are you to dictate to the rest of the world when you yourselves are debating and you yourselves have constant cases and whatnot back and forth between, and now the AI images, another debate is happening. If the AI comes in and pretends to be a living person and creates an indecent image, is that legal or not? Now the courts are debating this. Child, AI, the courts are debating this. So indecency laws are universal around the world. If a certain regime has a different standard than your regime, they're all standards. And no one culture should have the right to be the definitive. So we go on the defense over there as well. Another defense that we can do, or another, offensive. Another offensive we can do is that you seem to be overly concerned only when Muslim women are involved. You never get involved when the Western laws seem to criminalize against Muslim dress code. You only want their quote-unquote freedoms in Muslim lands. Why are you not complaining about Belgium and about France and about other countries that have banned the hijab or the niqab? Where's the freedom of women over there? And as you're probably aware, I just told you that a woman was arrested for, you know, exposing her lower leg in 1920. Well, a year ago, 2 years ago, a woman was arrested, a Muslim sister was arrested in France. And again, I showed the picture and I put it on my Facebook. She was arrested in France because she wore a headscarf and she was fully covered on the beach. The French have a law. It is not allowed to be covered on the beach. This is their law. And she got fined, I think, 500 euros. Why? Because she's wearing a headscarf and she's wearing a full, you know, modest clothing, sitting on the beach with her kids. And the police came and wrote her a fine. You're not allowed to be covered on the beach. How come these same institutions, CNN and Fox News, don't get irritated at France? Where's the freedom of the women in France all of a sudden? Selective outrage, only when Muslim women are covered, they just cannot stand it and they want to get rid of the covering. Okay, how about in Western laws, when Muslim women choose to be covered? How about then? So we can be on the offensive over here as well in this regard, that there's a selective outrage. Also, another offensive in reality that we have to point out is that this regime that you're so irritated about, it's not coming out of thin air. You used to control this very land. And in your time frame, this land was completely subjugated to internal civil war, to mobs, to hysteria. People were not safe on the streets. Women would get raped always under your watch. Under your watch, it was not safe for men and women to live. This regime has come. Whether you like it or not, they have brought a semblance of civil law and order. Women can actually walk safely on the street without being intimidated. Now, which would you rather have? A society where a woman can wear whatever she wants while, astaghfirullah, the possibility of being raped, which happened under your watch? Or a society where she might have to be a little bit extra, but there is civil law and order? You see, again, it's so easy for the critics to point out the negatives, but how about the positives? This society and this regime, whatever you want to say, it has brought stability. And it has brought a sense of order that this country has not had for over 40 years. And then I go to my final point here, and this is really the harshest point here. Who exactly are you to tell us that you care about women, especially in that region, when you directly have been involved in massacring and killing over 1 million people by your own invasions in that country? Wallahi, the hypocrisy of America, and I say this as somebody born and raised here, the hypocrisy of our government and our media to point fingers at a local group that is from their own tradition and background for having women cover and saying, we want the freedom of women. The very fingers you are wagging, they are dripping with the blood of 1 million widows. 1 million children have died because of our invasion. And even now, as we speak, you talk about caring for women. 50,000 children have died in Gaza because of your lands. So many women are without children, without husbands, massacred because of our bombs. We have to push back and say, who do you think you are to make us pretend that you care about women and children? It is obvious that you have no concern for actual sanctity of life. Rather, O Muslims, understand Understand, I don't like using the conspiracy card. I'm not going to say conspiracy, but I will say it's a vicious game that is being played. A vicious game. What is that game? The game is we need to pretend to the world we are morally better. We are superior to those people. We need to pretend that we are better. And of the ways we will pretend is we will pretend to care about women's rights and women's education. Wallahi, we care about women's rights and education. But you guys cannot claim you care about women's rights when you have bombed that very region back into medieval times, when you have invaded under false pretenses, when you have physically raped, a'udhu billah, your own troops, when you have had your own, you know, Bagram bases over there, your own torture chambers over there, when you have literally kidnapped women. We have Sister Afia sitting literally a few miles away, kidnapped in of the very land over there, the very land over there, literally the very land. So please spare us your hypocrisy that you care about women's rights, because wallahi, your actions speak louder than words. You do not care about women's rights. You do not care about education. You do not care about freedom. You have an agenda. And as a part of that agenda, you must portray that civilization as backward and barbaric, even though in terms of covering the hair versus bombing, you are the real barbaric aliens and invaders. You are the real people who have massacred and killed. There is no equation between covering the head versus literally massacring a million people. So please spare us this rhetoric of caring about women and wanting their betterment. You have no right to preach to the very people whom you have bombed into being of the Middle Ages. And it is because of your invasions and it is because of your meddling that this group has actually achieved legitimacy, because it is the only group that gave stability when you could not give stability. It's the only group that gave the people dignity because they actually represent the people. They're of the people and by the people. And even if I disagree with some of their policies, and I do, for the record, I do disagree. Listen to me carefully. My criticism will never ever be in the side of those that have invaded this country. My criticism will be as a brother to brother. Internally, we keep our baggage and our dirty laundry inside. I will not be used as a tool in a vicious game. I will not be used in a pawn from the very people who want to use me as an inside native informant, as a tool in a vicious game to legitimize invading, to legitimize their notion of them being superior. No, wallahi, they are not superior. And even if I disagree with some policies of this regime, and I do, I will try to advise them privately, or I will criticize them internally, or I will never ever join sides with the others and go on public TV and lambast them without pointing out who the heck do you think you are to get involved in all of this. So, oh Muslims, the situation is more complex. It's not a simplistic yes or no here. Even if we disagree, and I do disagree, be careful, be very careful that you do not become an unwitting pawn in a vicious game that is trying to legitimize the dehumanization of our religion. That's really the goal here. That's really what is happening here. They choose one of them who was no doubt viciously attacked and shot, and no doubt our sympathies goes out to this lady, and they give her the Nobel Prize, right? Whereas and why do they do this? Because once again, they want to portray that we are the victors, we are the superior race. This is all a facade. It's all a vicious game. How are you the superior race when you're the ones that bombed them back into medieval times? You're the ones that invaded. You're the ones that have deprived them of becoming a modern nation state. It's your double invasions and your supporting and you're doing this and that. So please spare us this false rhetoric and this hypocrisy of pretending to be superior. And therefore, O Muslims, and especially our youth here, do not think it's a simplistic either this or that. No, the world is much more complex. And when they criticize, they're not criticizing except with an agenda. And when they point fingers, those fingers are not pure fingers that they're pointing. So even if you disagree, then disagree from a different paradigm, not from their paradigm. And if they come and point something at our brothers and sisters, before you join them and say, yes, I agree like that, make sure you put a mirror to the very people that are pointing fingers. Make sure you show them, hold on a sec, who exactly are you? And there's a hypocrisy and there's selective outrage and this and that. So do not fall prey to this false narrative and understand the world is a complex place. It's not a simplistic place. In the end of the day, we make dua for our brothers and sisters in that region. for the people in charge in that region to take the advice and the mashwara of the global scholarly community to prioritize what Islam wants them to prioritize. I am not in a position to, you know, dictate minute details. Maybe some aspects are beyond my knowledge, so I'm not going to be too harsh and critical. But for the record, I say that I think that they need to also take into account the PR and the positives. And even from an Islamic perspective, really, why follow the strictest opinion? Why? When the Sharia has multiple opinions, in my humble opinion, if I were to advise them, I would say, you know, be wise in this regard and prioritize other things for the time being and have a soft morality. But to go to the very strictest, perhaps this might result in a backlash that is not good, but that is between me and them personally. When CNN comes and Fox News comes, I will not jump on their side and point fingers at my brothers and sisters. No, I will defend their right to do so, and I will say to CNN and Fox, who are you to criticize when you have far more bigger crimes that you have to answer for? You have no right to get involved and meddle in local affairs. Would you like it if they started pointing fingers at you and they started saying things about your industry? And again, so much can be said here. The filth of this land. Imagine if the power was reversed. Imagine if that country had superpowers, if that country had the media, if that country was invading this country, and constantly in the media, they're talking about, I'm sorry to be blunt here, the pornography of America, the OnlyFans of America, the filth of this country. They're constantly saying, look at these innocent ladies, how they're being misused and abused. 19-year-old girls, and they're being abused by these filthy men, and they constantly do this, and they're attacking this land, and they're throwing bombs on it. Would you like this to be completely switched around? And if that were to be switched around, it would make more sense, because we are defending the honor of our sisters around the world. But khair, in the end of the day, O Muslims, please be more intelligent, more nuanced. Understand that it's not a simple yes or no. And may Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala grant us the wisdom to not be an aid of an enemy against our brothers, even as we advise our brothers. Wa jazakumullahu khairan. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
إن المسلمين والمسلمات والمؤمنين والمؤمنات والقانتين والقانتات والصادقين والصادقات والصابرين والصابرات والخاشعين والخاشعات والخاشعين والخاشعات والمتصدقين والمتصدقات والصائمين والصائمات والحافظين فروجهم والحافظات والذاكرين الله كثيرا والذاكرات أعد الله لهم مغفرة وأجرا عظيما.